grassfires, sprint races, and a home GP. This week we headed out to the Shanghai International Circuit for the Chinese Grand Prix. So get ready, because you've been summoned to the steward's office. Hello everyone, welcome back to the steward's office. I'm Syrah, and this week we're chatting all about the Chinese Grand Prix. Now, we haven't been out to the Shanghai International Circuit in 5 years. 2019 was the last time we headed out there, and it was the first time that Zhou Guanyu was going to be able to race at his home Grand Prix. And because he is the first ever Chinese F1 driver, it was also the first time that China had one of their own countrymen in an F1 car. And if that wasn't enough for firsts, this was also the first sprint weekend of the F1 season. So there was a lot going on. Yes, an interesting choice to have China be your first sprint race of the season when we haven't been there in 5 years. I was super excited for F1 to head out to China though. They've had some epic races there in the past. This is the first Chinese F1 GP that I've actually been able to watch live. All the other GPs that I have watched of China have been past races on F1 TV, but have been epic ones, the ones I've managed to watch. So I was super excited to head back out there, and the fans were so excited to have cars back on track, to see drivers, to see Zhou Guanyu out there. And yeah, there was a lot of support for Formula One out at the Shanghai International Circuit. But let's dive in to this weekend. And I don't think there was a whole lot of news in and around F1 this week, but there are 2 points that I do want to just sort of talk about today. Now, one of them is about Carlos Sainz and his seat for 2025. And to be fair, there's been a lot of talk about Carlos Sainz and where he's going to be heading, especially over the last couple of races, because his performance has been stellar. There's no other way to describe it. Helmut Marko though came out in the media apparently and said that yeah, they had been talking to Carlos Sainz, but he had a very, very good deal from Audi, who are going to be entering F1 in 2026, taking over Kik Sauber. And it was an offer, Helmut Marko said, that Red Bull couldn't match or beat. So it definitely sounds like Red Bull are interested in Carlos being in the car. I think they would be crazy not to at least consider him. So that doesn't surprise me. I think what it is going to come down to for Carlos is, do you want a lucrative, really, really good deal from Audi, who are in unknown quantity in Formula One right now? Or do you take a deal that maybe Red Bull can't match, but are a very known quantity? And I think at least for the next year in 2025, until engine regs change, are probably still going to be dominating. So that's what I've kind of been wondering about. I think Christian Horner had also come out this week saying that the decision about the Red Bull seat, that is Checo's seat, because his contract is up this year, won't be made until later on in the year. I don't think this is going to be a decision Red Bull really want to rush into. They really want to figure out what is going on with the driver market. You've got Sergio Perez, who they possibly could keep on. You've got Daniel Ricciardo in the V carb right now, who they might want to see over the next couple of races whether his performance improves. You've got Carlos Sainz in the Ferrari right now doing extremely well. And look, I know maybe realistically not an option for Red Bull. You also do have Yuki Tsunoda in the V carb right now, who is performing fairly well as well. So yeah, I don't think this is going to be something that they rush into. I think they're going to want to take their time. Sergio Perez, I think, also has come out and said that he thinks it would make sense for Red Bull to keep him on for another year or two while the regulations change. But I think Red Bull are going to do whatever they think is best, whatever driver they think is going to help them win a Constructors' Championship, help them fight at the front of the field continuously. I don't know how far into the future they're really looking though. For me, I think their future and what they're looking for in the long term is going to be Liam Lawson. As long as he performs, if he gets an F1 seat, I think that is where they're looking at for long-term trajectory, a lot like they did with Max Verstappen. So that's what happened there. A lot of chat about Carlos Sainz again this weekend. But I think between Carlos, Red Bull, Audi, all of them are going to want to take their time in figuring out what to do. I think especially Carlos and Red Bull in this situation. The other piece of news that came out this weekend was that Formula One are going to have a meeting next week to have a chat about how they give out points on a Grand Prix weekend. Currently, points go from P1 to P10, 25 all the way down to 1. They are looking at expanding that down to P 12. Almost like it makes it less special. You dilute the value of points if you're spreading them further down the field. However, I can see the argument for it, right? Because I think we would get people being a bit more feisty in the back, people wanting to fight and overtake a little bit more. If you're going down to P12, at this current point in Formula One, it looks like the top five teams are really locked in, right? Red Bull, Ferrari, McLaren, Aston Martin and Mercedes, and those are the teams that are generally consistently getting in the points. And what it is making it a lot harder for the bottom five teams to get into the points, right? It's dribs and drabs, it's maybe someone in one of the top teams has DNF'd, maybe they've had a spin, a penalty, whatever. That's how those teams seem to be getting into the points more frequently than not at the moment. We haven't really closed up the field between the top five teams and the bottom five teams, and we're not really seeing the cost cap fully come into play yet. So in one respect, yeah, I could see us maybe waiting and holding off and leaving it as the top 10 teams, because the hope is that we are eventually going to see all 10 teams being able to compete a little closer together, right? And that the points that are given out on a race weekend aren't as predictable as to which teams are getting them. There is a chance that that might not happen, though. It is just the nature of Formula One that, yes, it just in general, you know, there are teams that will read the regulations and rules better when they change, will be more consistently in the points. Some teams still can't really reach the cost cap either. It's still too high for them. So I can see the for and against. If I was looking at the current state of Formula One, I would think, yeah, expanding it down to P12 would make a lot of sense. But if the hope and the vision and the trajectory is that all 10 teams will eventually be closer together, then I would say leave it up to P10. However, I don't necessarily think we will get to that hope and that vision. But that's enough about the news and future of F1, what happened during this race weekend. Like I mentioned, we had a sprint weekend, and the sprint weekend format has changed. F1 are still trying to sort of refine how they're doing sprint weekends, refine the rules, figure out a format that really works. So we do have a new format being used in all six sprint races this year. We used to have qualifying on a Friday after FP1, and Saturday was just for the sprint race. You'd have sprint quali and then the sprint, right? This year they're changing that around, so we have FP1 on a Friday followed by sprint quali. On a Saturday morning we have the sprint, Saturday afternoon is qualifying, and then on a Sunday we have the Grand Prix as usual. As far as I'm aware, Park Fermi rules have changed with that format change, so I'm pretty sure after the sprint race changes can be made for qualifying and the Grand Prix, and they lock in that car setup. One of the weirdest things that happened in China throughout this weekend, though, was the fact that we had a random grass on fire in the middle of sessions. Extremely odd, wasn't something that I've seen in Formula One before, not something I think most people have seen in Formula One before. Apparently, what the FIA was saying is that it was due to sparks coming off the car. They got onto the grass and it just caused the grass to smoke, to be set on fire and then turn black. So we had some stoppages in the sessions just because of that. I can't lie though, I initially found it slightly creepy, but yeah, apparently just because of the sparks from the car. Now, I think part of the reason that sprint quali was so interesting though is because it wasn't a dry sprint quali. I call it sprint quali, it's actually sprint shootout, so yeah, I should call it sprint shootout. It wasn't a fully dry session though. SQ1, drivers were given the hurry up just to get out there, get a lap done, because the rain was going to start coming in. Towards the end of sprint quali 1 is when we had our second fire. The first one happened during FP1, and then SQ1 at the end, we had the grass fire come back up again. That ended up causing a delay for SQ2 because the marshals had to come out, put the fire out and make sure that it was properly put out. We had drivers just waiting in the pit lane to go out. We had cold tires. Didn't really have to deal with too much rain in SQ2, but by SQ3, all inters on all of the cars. There was no way they were going to be running with anything else. A lot of drivers going off the track because of the rain though, not being able to get lap times in properly. Charles had a spin, I think. Lando Norris had some track limit infringements. Max Verstappen had some track limit infringements, but Lando did manage to pull a lap together, which was absolutely epic, and took a pole for the sprint race. Lewis Hamilton was behind him, and then Fernando Alonso followed by Max Verstappen. And there was a lot of hope from a lot of McLaren fans, from McLaren themselves, from Lando Norris fans, that Lando was going to get his first win in F1, right? Oscar Piastri has gotten a sprint win. Last season he managed that. Lando is still waiting for that elusive win, and so many people talk about it. So many people talk about the fact that they're just surprised that he hasn't won a race yet. So I think a lot of people thought this was really an opportunity for him. It was a sprint, so a smaller amount of laps to get through. Max Verstappen was in fourth place, so was there the potential? Because the McLaren didn't look super weak or anything out in China, was there the chance that he could do it? The race start basically washed away those hopes very quickly during the sprint. Lewis Hamilton just had an epic start. Didn't give Lando the room during that turn, and then, yeah, bolted into P1, and Lando Norris ended up falling back a fair bit. He finished the race in P6, which is probably not where he wanted to be. I mean, to start in pole and then not be able to get a podium either is a little bit gutting, but he went off track during Lewis's overtake, and I think it took some of the heat out of the tyres on top of potentially some of the life that was in the tyres as well. But P6 is not awful, but it is gutting that he couldn't get the race win there. We had a retirement from Fernando Alonso after an incident between him and Carlos Sainz, and Carlos Sainz was getting very racy during the sprint. That DNF though was down to a puncture that Alonso had after contact with Carlos, and the steward said that it was his fault that they had that contact, and he got a 10 second time penalty. Look, there were a couple of, I wouldn't say issues with the FIA rules, but I think the clarity in some of the rules, or the understanding that fans have had and that teams have had of the rules, and we will get into all of that in a second. But he got his 10 second time penalty. It was added on to his elapsed time, but he had already DNF'd, so that 10 second time penalty wasn't going to make a difference. What we do sometimes get are the stewards saying you have a 10 second time penalty and it will be applied to the next race, or you'll get a grid penalty. Maybe not a time penalty. What you'll get is a grid penalty, a 2-3 place grid penalty, because either the race is finished and we investigate it after the race, or in the case of Alonso, he had DNF'd. So that 10 second time penalty for him didn't actually make a difference. Lewis Hamilton did lead the sprint for about 9 laps before Max Verstappen caught him, and then he just stood no chance, if I'm honest with you. The fact that Lewis managed to finish in P2, Max got the race win, Sergio in P3, I was quite surprised that he had managed to hold on to P2. Like that, I am slightly surprised at. So it was a good showing for Mercedes during the sprint. Quali for the actual Grand Prix though was just your normal affair. We had Max Verstappen taking pole position, Sergio Perez lining up alongside him. Fernando Alonso took P3. Like I said, the Aston with him looked so good this weekend. Ferraris did not do as well in qualifying. They got P6 and P7. I think the biggest shock was Lewis Hamilton in P18. After getting P2 earlier on in the day, that afternoon, they had made setup changes to the cars. Lewis opted to go one way, George opted to go another, and a couple of lockups from Lewis during Q1 just meant that he ended up in P18. So a bit of a roller coaster ride for Lewis Hamilton and Lewis Hamilton fans during this weekend. One of the things that did happen though, and I'm pretty sure it was in Q2, was the fact that Carlos Sainz ended up having a spin. Now, he was fine. The car did stop on track, and then he was able to get back going, get into the pits, and then carry on with qualifying. It was red flagged while his car was on track and the debris and everything. Ferrari changed the nose on Carlos's car, and he managed to carry on during qualifying. The other thing that I was talking about with the FIA and potentially a lack in clarity in their rules came from qualifying and was down to Aston Martin lodging a complaint with the stewards, right? Because they said in the rules, it says that if a driver stops on track during qualifying or sprint shootout, they cannot carry on in qualifying in that session. So if it's sprint shootout or quali, they stop on track, they can't carry on, even, I'm assuming what Aston Martin were thinking, even if they can get back to the garage. What the stewards had said was that, yes, the rules say that, they've never applied that in that way because Carlos Sainz managed to get back to his garage without any external help. They didn't need anyone to sort of jumpstart the car to get the engine going again, and he didn't need marshals to push him. He didn't need anyone to take the car back to the garage. He got the car started up by himself and drove it back to the garage, and that is what the rules are meant to mean. Obviously, because it wasn't written that it would be down to needing external help, that a driver wouldn't be able to carry on in a session, Aston Martin thought that they would have a case. They didn't. And yeah, I do think that maybe the FIA just need to go into those rules and really explicitly state that that is what they mean. It would save them a lot of time because they wouldn't have to, you know, deal with the complaints that are being lodged. And it'd save the teams a lot of time because they'd be like, we already know that we don't stand a chance in, you know, doing anything here. So yeah, I think there are just certain points where I think the FIA could maybe tidy up the rules, make things a little bit more explicit when needed, and it would just make things clearer for the teams, for the fans, and make life easier for the stewards as well. The race itself, Logan Sargeant ended up starting from the pit lane, and I had not tuned into coverage until about 7:30. I was not paying full attention at 7:30, I can't lie, I was making a cuppa and everything. And I saw him start from the pit lane and had no clue why. Basically, Williams had said they'd broken part firme because they wanted to experiment with setups ready for the Miami Grand Prix because that is a sprint weekend, apparently. That's why they were doing it. Logan was starting in P20 anyway, so it wasn't going to make a whole host of difference. So yeah, I think they just thought best bet is just to experiment on your car and see what happens. Biggest talking points from the race though, I mean, right at the start, Fernando Alonso had a brilliant start to the race and took P2 from Sergio Perez, which I loved watching. I absolutely loved seeing him race and do those overtakes. Don't get me wrong, it didn't last super long, and by lap 7 he was down in P4, but it was nice to see such a brilliant start from him. The pit stop from Pierre Gasly, his first pit stop of the race, was not great. The right rear wheel didn't go on properly, so that was already a slow stop for him, and then on the way out he ended up hitting a mechanic who we are told is okay. For me, I found the first couple of laps quite interesting between Fernando Alonso doing that overtake right at the start of the race and seeing those overtakes right at the beginning, and then it just started to die down a little bit around lap 18. Lap 21, Valtteri Bottas ended up retiring from the race. His car stopped on track, his engine, he said, had just gone, and we had a yellow flag in the third sector. That lasted so long though. I mean, Bottas had gotten out of the car and, you know, was just waiting for the car to leave and for him to get away off track, and they weren't getting a VSC or a safety car out, and me and the commentators, other fans, my family, none of us could understand why it had taken so long to go from a yellow flag and double waved yellows to a VSC or a full safety car, whichever one was going to work for them, right? Especially when you have a driver out of their car and on track. I think for me, that was the main thing I was shocked at, is that you wouldn't call a VSC when you know that there is a driver out of his car on track. It did eventually go to a VSC and then went to a safety car. And yes, we did get a couple of pit stops during that time, but it's the start after the safety car that I want to talk about. Because at the back of the field, around the start finish straight as the safety car had gone in, Lance Stroll's car ended up going right into the back of Daniel Ricciardo's V-carb, and that car got lifted up into the air. And Daniel's car then hit Oscar Piastri's when he had that contact from Lance. Now, for some reason, Lance on the radio ended up blaming Daniel for this and said he didn't understand why Daniel would break out of nowhere. And I get it that Lance can't see everything, but when you watch the broadcast, you can tell that Daniel hadn't actually done anything wrong, nor had Oscar Piastri. Cars had started to slow down, ready to build up speed because the safety car had gone in. Daniel had to brake because Oscar had ended up braking, because George had ended up braking, because I think Fernando Alonso had slowed down a little bit. So their reaction times were there to be like, nope, gonna have to slow down, otherwise I'm gonna go into the back of this car. And for Lance, I think it's either gonna be he wasn't focusing properly or his reaction times weren't great, because there was no one else at fault there. He ended up wrecking his front wing because of that and had to go into the pits. Daniel Ricciardo got damage on a brand new chassis and later on had to retire. And then Oscar Piastri also had significant damage to his car. Lance did end up getting a 10-second time penalty because of that contact though. And yeah, I mean, I think that penalty was warranted. But then further on, during that first lap after the safety car had gone in, Kevin Magnussen had attempted what was a really aggressive and potentially optimistic move on Yuki Tsunoda. Yuki really did not have anywhere else to go. He had picked a sort of racing line that he was going to commit to around a corner. Kevin Magnussen sort of came in, didn't give Yuki any other room to move to get out of the way for him, went into Yuki, caused Yuki to spin, and Yuki Tsunoda ended up retiring. That ended up causing Magnussen to have a 10-second time penalty as well. But because Yuki had ended up stopping on track and retiring, we had another safety car come out. So the two safety cars were literally back to back. I don't think we had a full proper racing lap after the first one went in. Logan Sargeant, because of that second safety car period, also got a 10-second time penalty for overtaking and the safety car rules. I just checked my phone and Daniel Ricciardo has also been given a 3-place grid penalty for the Miami race because he overtook Nico Hülkenberg under safety car conditions. I think that might have been during the second safety car period. And that was before he ended up having to retire from the race, which is why he has a 3-place grid penalty. It was a decision given after the race. And because Miami is a sprint, I'm pretty sure he'll be able to serve that 3-place grid penalty during the sprint and not the actual Grand Prix, which does lessen the blow of it a little bit. So at least at this point of recording, right, because I don't know if anything else has gone to the steward's office at this point. 4 penalties coming out of this weekend. Daniel, though, because of the damage to that chassis, that brand new chassis that he had in China, did end up also having to retire the car, so that was both of the V-carbs out of the race. But I think those are the major highlights of the race. Max Verstappen did end up winning the Chinese Grand Prix, and I think this is the first time he has ever won the Chinese GP as well. 5 years ago, I don't think the Red Bull was necessarily in the best place to win a race out in 2019, but with the way the car is now and the way Max is driving, I don't think anyone was expecting anything different. It wasn't a Red Bull 1-2 though, it wasn't a Constructors 1-2 like we've had in every race so far this season. Lando Norris took home P2, which I'm sure was extremely welcome for him after what happened during the sprint, and then Sergio Perez was in P3. 3 retirements, 2 safety cars, 1 VSC. I mean, it was a messy race, but I can't say it was the most interesting race. I mean, I don't think incidents like what happened with Daniel and Lance and what happened with Yuki and Kevin really should make a race interesting per se. There were gaps between the drivers once again, and I've said this in nearly every race this season, I think, where there is so much of the race where drivers are not within DRS, are not close enough to overtake. And yeah, I am really curious whether that is going to change as the season goes on, as upgrades start to be bolted onto the cars and people make improvements. I hope it gets better, because looking at the timing screen and seeing a 1.5 second, 2-3 second distance between the drivers isn't exciting. It isn't great. What I will say for the Chinese Grand Prix though is that we did have some really interesting epic overtakes. I really did enjoy that, and I think China as a circuit, the Shanghai International Circuit, does suit a sprint race way more than some of the circuits that we've been on. So I think this is potentially going to be a circuit that F1 opt to keep as a sprint race circuit. Quick run through of the teams though. I mean, Red Bull, flawless weekend really. I mean, not flawless in that, okay, it wasn't a 1-2 and neither of their drivers got fastest lap. That was Fernando Alonso because he had to pit later on in the race compared to everyone else. But still a very, very good weekend for them. They took their 100th pole in Formula 1 from Max Verstappen during qualifying. So yeah, a really good weekend for them and some epic pit stops. Ferrari, on the other hand, didn't have a bad weekend, but their race and quali pace did not seem great. I don't think this was a track necessarily suited to their car, because they just didn't seem to really make many inroads in the sprint race for the first part of the Grand Prix. They just seemed to sort of be sitting there not being able to really make any overtakes. Wasn't amazing, wasn't awful though. I mean, P4 and P5 in the Grand Prix is a very, very good result, but that gap between them and Red Bull has opened up a little bit in the Constructors' Championship. McLaren, I mean, the pole during the sprint was amazing. Sprint itself probably wasn't great for Lando, but I think he put his all into the actual Grand Prix and it paid off. P2 split in the Red Bulls and had a really phenomenal drive. He was the driver of the day that fans had voted for, and I have to say he was also my driver of the day. I think he had a really, really brilliant race. Calm, cool, collected, got the job done and drove really, really well. Oscar, on the other hand, it wasn't great. I think the damage towards the end of the Grand Prix ruined that later stage in the GP. So hopefully he can bounce back in Miami. Mercedes, I mean, they are just continuing to experiment with their setup. The P2 for the sprint was amazing for Lewis. I know, you know, Toto doesn't seem too happy with it, but at the moment, Toto doesn't seem too happy with anything. I think between the car not being great and I think there is a lot of unhappiness about the fact that Lewis has opted to leave and go to Ferrari next year. I just don't think he is a happy bunny right now, and I hope that doesn't spread to the rest of the team. I hope that isn't a feeling that is being fed to the rest of the team, but he just looks so unhappy and stressed on a race weekend. Even that P2 in the sprint, he didn't necessarily seem impressed with it. But yeah, Mercedes are continuing to experiment with their car. Both drivers are doing the best they can in every session they go into to try and figure out what to do. Yeah, it's not showing signs of getting better for them. And Toto has said there are no upgrades coming to Miami for their drivers. So I do think Miami is also going to be another not great race for them. Aston Martin, I mean, Fernando Alonso, what an epic weekend for him. I know, okay, his final race result wasn't the best, okay? He ended up finishing in P7. That late pit stop wasn't great, but he absolutely blasted his way through the grid as much as he could. And just in general, I think qualifying and sprint shootout went really well for him. I think the sprint race was still good for him. He did look like he was going to be on for a P3 until that incident. So, okay, fair enough. Wasn't a great sprint, but that was, I think, because of the DNF. Without that, I don't know. He did seem to be losing speed a little bit and losing that pace, but he just looks like he's at one with that Aston Martin at the moment. He looks quite confident in it, and he's just doing what Fernando Alonso does, which is extracting the most out of the car and making those aggressive moves to get through the field, and he's doing it brilliantly. Lance Stroll, on the other hand, I mean, yeah, that incident at the end of the GP was not great. Quali, he didn't manage to get into Q3. It's an interesting one with Lance. I think he was outqualified last year by his teammate. Alonso also managed to beat him in the head-to-head for races. Look, I don't think it's going to be any different this year. I think there will be races and weekends that we go to where Lance will be able to beat Alonso. But if we're looking at the whole of 2024, I don't think it's likely to happen. And I think everyone has this conversation about Lance. So when you see the gap between where Lance and Alonso are, about what his future is with Aston Martin, right? At what sort of point do you turn around and have another driver put into that car instead of Lance Stroll? And I've mentioned it before, and I think it is going to take Lance just walking away eventually. I don't know when Aston Martin call a time on Lance and look for a different driver in that car. Felipe Drugovich is waiting on the sidelines as a development and a sim driver and a reserve driver for them. And then you have so many drivers in F2, so many drivers waiting to come into Formula 1. Drivers that are currently on the grid as well. You look at the likes of Alex Albon and the way he can race, not really being able to show that in the Williams so far. But yeah, there are drivers on the grid right now. If you are looking for experience because you don't want an inexperienced rookie in your car right now with the way you're trying to push the team forward, fair enough. There are other drivers on the grid that I think could do an amazing job in the Aston Martin next to Fernando Alonso, because I do think the Aston Martin is a better car than the Mercedes right now, but it's not able to outscore Mercedes because Lance isn't able to score points. And I think that's what's hampering them right now, because yes, it was a bad weekend for Mercedes and it was a bad qualifying for Lewis. The race wasn't brilliant in terms of race pace. He did manage to get up to P9 and made some excellent moves. I think some of the DNFs did help because he was getting stuck behind the V-carbs a couple of times during the race. But both drivers managed to finish in the points. And I think that's what you kind of need when you are where you are at the table. You need that consistency of both drivers scoring points because that is what moves you up the constructors' table. And I'm sure Aston would love to be in P4 right now. So yeah, I think this is another weekend where people will raise questions about Lance Stroll and what his future looks like in Aston Martin and what Aston Martin's future looks like as well. But I guess we'll just wait and see there. V-carb, yeah. Double DNF. No points this weekend. They didn't score anything in the sprint either. Yuki Tsunoda was very, very lost this weekend. He was really struggling to get to grips with the car multiple times during the weekend. You know, he was on the radio and he just didn't seem to be able to get a good feel for the car. I did mention Daniel Ricciardo had a new chassis, which he had wanted, and the team said they were already building a new chassis, so they were gonna have that for China anyway. He did have a better weekend overall. It looked more competitive. This is also a track that he has won at before, not just raced at. He's won there before. And so I think that has helped his confidence. I think the new chassis has helped his confidence. Whether it was actually the chassis itself, I don't know. Maybe it's a mentality thing that helped him, but it is gutting that that floor is now damaged. I really hope that it's a quick repair job that can then be used in Miami for him. But yeah, just not great for them. Neither of their DNFs were down to them either. Daniel and Yuki were just caught up in unfortunate incidents. And I think for Daniel more than Yuki, because Yuki has had a good season so far, but I think Daniel has lacked that bit of confidence. And this looked like a weekend where he seemed to be building towards something really good for him. And yeah, that incident just wiped it out. And it feels like luck is going against him in this race, in this weekend, because of what's happened. And that can't help mentality-wise either. So hopefully V-carb as a whole will have a better race out in Miami. Haas and Williams, I'm going to say, have just had a quiet race. Both of them wasn't the most exciting. Magnussen got a 10-second time penalty. Sargeant got a 10-second time penalty. But Haas did manage to get another point in this race. Nico Hülkenberg took P10. Alex Albon, though, the Williams driver that didn't get the penalty, didn't manage to score points. I mean, Haas itself at least look a little bit racier. Williams still seemed to be struggling. For Kick Sauber, I mean, look, an extremely special race for Zhou Guanyu. His first ever home Grand Prix. The first time China were going to have a Chinese F1 driver at the Chinese Grand Prix. And it probably meant so much to them. You could tell how much it meant to Zhou Guanyu. And it was absolutely beautiful to watch. Seeing all of that emotion that Zhou Guanyu had at the end of that race. And yeah, just really, really beautiful to see. Sauber as a whole, though, I mean, Bottas looked like he was going to do well in this race. It looked really good. He qualified into P10 and then the engine gave up on him. And weekend over, didn't matter what he was doing, whatever he was putting in, he was gone. Pit stops, I mean, I think the only one I properly saw was sub 10 seconds. I think it was around 5, so better than 50. Still not quick though. Wheel nuts are still a problem for this team. Zhou ended up finishing in 14th. So not in the points, but I think you could tell when he was racing, he was so feisty, really put his all into it and had some great moves and great overtakes. So no points, but I think he should be extremely proud of the performance that he did put in. That DNF though has led to Sauber being in P10. They were P9 in the constructors. They've now been bumped down to P10 because Alpine have finally made it out of the bottom of the table. They are in P9s. Still no points, don't get me wrong. We are still pointless for Alpine, but no longer at the bottom of the table for them. We had some upgrades coming in for Ocon, and I think, okay, yes, this was a quiet weekend for them. No points. However, Ocon ended up in P11 during the Grand Prix, only one place away from the points. Yes, I think benefited once again by three DNFs during that race, especially with the two V-carbs being out. But at least they went right at the back of the field, because that's where both their drivers have been, is right towards the back. So it looks a little bit better for them. They look to be fighting in the midfield a little bit more. We'll check out in Miami whether these upgrades have really worked for them and where they finish there, because hopefully if there are no DNFs, we'll get a better read on that. But yeah, I think we should just celebrate the fact that they managed to get to P9 in the Constructors instead of P10, because they have been in P10 every single race this season. After everyone has finished, they have been in P10. So a bump up for Alpine. Maybe this is the new trajectory for them. The only way was up from P10. So maybe P8. After Miami, maybe I'm getting a little bit too hopeful, but we are going to give it to Alpine because it's been a painful season so far for them. What a weekend though for the Chinese Grand Prix. And whilst, okay, the race wasn't the most exciting thing ever for me personally, I don't think it was that bad. I did enjoy sprint quali and the sprint race for a couple of laps at least. Max Verstappen taking the win. Nice to see Lando Norris up on the podium. Great to see Lewis Hamilton take P2 in the sprint. And we will wait and see what happens during the next race and for the rest of the season. I really am just waiting for the development race to kick in for this season. And I know it's not going to really happen in the flyaway races that we have. We're hitting the European season so soon, and that is when I think a lot of the upgrades are going to be coming in. Every race we're going to be hearing about a team, hopefully, you know, depending on cost cap issues and everything, having some kind of upgrade on their car. No race next week, but then we head out to Miami. It will be another sprint weekend. I've not always been a fan of the Miami circuit, I can't lie. I love the fact that, you know, the paddock is in the stadium and everything. I love that all the motorhomes are in there. But yeah, the circuit itself is not my favourite, but we will wait and see what happens out there. Whether Ferrari managed to bounce back a little bit with their race pace, what happens with Alpine, and yeah, what happens with another sprint race weekend. Thank you guys so, so much for listening, and diolch yn fawr. Make sure you follow me on Instagram and TikTok at stewards_office, and I will see you guys the next time you're summoned to the steward's office.